As a result, those who maintain that all knowledge must be proved intellectually, they came to discard all revelations. There was a sharp quarrel between the intellectuals and the religionists. Those who believed that religion is a mere matter of faith, it has just to be taken for granted, and you have to believe in it. And belief itself is a pathway to salvation. You don't need to do much more than this. What is demanded of the individuals is simply to believe, and belief itself is a road to salvation. You are merely saved by God if you just say, "I believe." And the rationalists, they discarded this theory and completely rejected it, saying, we don't accept it. What is not intellectually proved, we cannot accept. And this conflict between intellect and dogma, conflict between revelation and reason, is a very important chapter in the history of Western thought, which continues up till today. Even today, in the West there are two groups: those who believe that religion is a mere matter of faith, and that you should never try to prove, or even either by experience or by thinking, and the other group which says that we do not accept anything to be true unless intellectually it is proved to be true. And this number of the rationalists is increasing. Now this is the scenario of the West. In Indian thought, this quarrel never arose because of those two statements which are made, that the contents of Shruti can be both intellectually proved and can also be verified in spiritual experience. If you read the Bhagavad Gita from this point of view, you will find that Bhagavad Gita itself is a book of great intellectual argument. It is also a statement of great spiritual experience. In fact, both the trends are present. That is why the importance of the Gita is so great, because of this reason. In the Upanishads, it is purely spiritual experience. In the Veda, purely spiritual experience. There is no intellectual argument. In the Gita, both these trends are put together. The statements which are made, we derive from such spiritual experience, but also intellectually incorrigible. Like the statement which I made in the beginning, Nasato vidyate bhavo, nabhavo vidyate sata. That which does not exist cannot exist. That which exists can never be not existing. Statements of this kind are intellectually incorrigible. Also, they are the results of a great spiritual experience, that they have seen those spiritual realized souls have experienced the Spirit. They have found the experience of the Spirit of imperishable nature, existence which cannot perish. Therefore, of Sat there can be no abhava. Sat of which abhava is impossible. It is imperishable. Now, nonetheless, I only gave you this background to appreciate what I am now going to say about the debate with which I started, that in the history of thought there has been a long debate whether we can intellectually prove the existence of God. And although I told you in the West, the conclusion was that the idea of God which is revealed cannot be intellectually proved. Yet there was a long development in the history of Western thought when many religious leaders tried to prove the existence of God by intellectual means. In India also, we have many methods of proving the existence of God. In fact, each system of Indian philosophy is in a sense an attempt to prove the existence of God intellectually. Nyaya, Vaisheshika, Sankhya, Yoga, Purva Mimamsa, Uttara Mimamsa. These are the six systems of Indian philosophy which are based upon Vedic upon Shruti. Buddhism and Jainism, which are not based upon Shruti, they have a different approach. They are also highly intellectual, and there also whatever is spiritually experienced is also to be intellectually tested. In fact, Buddha declared, this is one of his famous declarations, "Do not believe anything because I have said it or because anybody has said it. Believe only if in your intellectual speculation, in your impartial search by your intellectual thought, you really come to the conclusion that it is true." So, in Jainism also there is a tremendous intellectuality by which the propositions of Jainism, which are based upon spiritual experience ultimately, are sought to be proved intellectually. So there is in India a long process by which intellectually the propositions of revelation have been attempted to be proved. So let us now see at least one example, and I shall take the example of an argument put forward by one of the leaders of religion in the West called Anselm, A-N-S-E-L-M. He was one of the great religious leaders, and he argued that existence of God can be proved intellectually. And I shall now state to you his argument in a very brief manner, in a very simple manner, even if you say in a childish manner, so that it can be understood much more easily. Now, first statement is, in this proof, God is a being than whom greater cannot be conceived. I shall repeat this sentence because it's a very important statement. God is a being than whom greater cannot be conceived. This is the first statement. Now, second statement. God, who is only in conception, is lesser than God who is in existence also. God, who is only in conception, is lesser than God who is also in existence. Therefore, God who is one, who is a being than whom greater cannot be conceived, must not only be in a thought, he must also be in existence. Right? I shall repeat. It's a very interesting argument. God is a being than whom greater cannot be conceived. God who is in existence is greater than the God who is only in conception. Therefore, God exists. Now, this argument which Anselm put forward reigned quite for a long time in the West. Almost every philosopher after Anselm has tried to grapple with this argument. In a certain sense, it seems to be so easy, so clinching, as if God's existence is proved. No question about it. And yet there is a feeling there is some catch in the argument. It doesn't really satisfy. Is it really satisfactory proof? Does it really prove the existence of God? Descartes, for example, who came after Anselm, he formulated this very argument in different words. He said, every human being, this was his argument, every human being has a concept of perfection. That concept may be adequate, inadequate, whatever, but there is a concept of perfection. Perfection at least means one thing, which includes everything. Perfection is that which includes everything. Existence is something. Therefore, perfection must be existing. And perfection means God. Therefore, God exists. This was his proof of the existence of God. God exists. Merely by the concept of perfection which is in your mind, anybody's mind, everybody's mind, from the concept of perfection, he proves the existence of perfection, and by perfection is meant God. In fact, many people are quite satisfied with this argument, and they feel that God's existence is proved.